Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Dun 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 da 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 da.
You sound happy, Pastor Dave.
Oh, I am. Da da
da da. And a nice heart and soul right there.
Well, it is, but today it's not heart and soul. It's short and sweet. Short and sweet. Let's make this beginning short and sweet.
All right.
Because we have Pastor Kevin back to finish up a few comments about the 10th plague and all that took place and how it relates to us in our Christian faith. So let's go ahead and get to it.
Last week, we began an interview with Pastor Kevin Parviz of Congregation Kyrie Shalom, and we started talking a little bit about his story and about the Passover. Let's continue that interview now.
Can you relate what this historical event meant to you prior to becoming a Christian, just as a Jew, as you heard this being related on a yearly basis?
Yeah, that's almost an embarrassment, frankly, because, and I think I'm not alone in this with most of my Jewish brothers and sisters. And I think like anything else, in the church, we have a potentially bad way of sort of minimizing what the Lord's Supper is because we take it so often. And we really have to actually work at understanding and rejoicing in the blessing that is that sacrament. And I think the same is true for Jewish people who you know, they recite these events, they eat all the foods, they prepare the seven course meal,
Seder that we're talking about now. Seder.
They go through all the ritual of telling the story. When in fact, most Jewish people don't believe it actually happened. Most Jewish people, if you'd look at most polls, Jewish people don't really believe that that the Israelites crossed the Red Sea on dry land with a wall of water on their left and on their right. They think of this as just a good story, a grandma story. We say booby mises in our language. And it's a good time of family. It's like, you know, Thanksgiving or any other meal that we might have had. But to actually, the import of the Seder doesn't fall well on us. And I know when I was a really young child, I remember really, I suppose like a lot of my friends did for Santa Claus, I really anticipated the coming of Elijah. I literally went out the door looking into the darkness to see if he was coming. My imagination, you know, as part of the Seder, there's a cup of wine poured for Elijah. Mm-hmm. And I would see in my imagination anyway, and I'd swear it happened, the level of wine go down in that cup during that Seder. And, you know, and that's all of this anticipation of a child knowing that if Elijah comes, he's going to announce the coming of the Messiah. But if you do that often enough and nothing happens, and you're not told what all these things really mean in the economy of God, it just becomes a silly childhood fixation that eventually you grow out of and you just go through these things kind of ritually for the sake of culture without ever really. And of course, no one, what the sad thing is that part of the tradition of the Seder is to invite a Gentile to come and share it with you. They're supposed to represent the sojourners who went out from Egypt with the Israelites. And there were faithful Egyptians who trusted God because they trusted their friends. Their friends told them, come into our home and be safe and leave with us. And they did.
Thank you. And every year, we at Congregation Kiva Shalom celebrate the Seder, even though it is a Jewish festival. And there have been those who have condemned us for doing so. But every year you say you can't have the Seder without having Christ in it.
Yeah,
there's just no way.
Yeah, the Haggadah that I wrote, and I you know,
the Haggadah is like the Seder program,
right? It means the telling. It's the story, and you know, I used a traditional Haggadah, but where it was, I mean, every piece along the way, if you think about it through the lens of Christ, it has so much meaning. I mean, it's just amazing.
Well, two questions occur to me then. Seder, first, what does that word mean?
Seder is just Hebrew for order.
Okay.
It is the order of the service. And so there is an order to how the Seder goes. And there's an order in what prayers are said and what foods are eaten.
And it is.
And this is something that takes place for any Jewish or Christian celebrating the Seder today?
I mean, it's all the same. You can't change it. Right? It was the same Seder that Jesus celebrated. Clearly, when you look at, if you even look at the vignette of what we get in the scriptures about that night, and you think about the things, and of course, all the gospel accounts and are a little bit different, but they all, if you put them all together, they follow the order of the Seder.
It seems, Cecilia, that for our listeners at Room 4216, perhaps we should do a whole episode on the Seder, because all we've done really here so far is talk about the 10th plague and the meal. But it sounds like there's a lot that points to Christianity and Jesus within this meal itself.
And it is a meal for all the senses, let me tell you.
Is this something, Pastor Kevin, you'd be willing to come back and help us do?
If you twist my arm.
Okay. We'll try to do that. We'll try to do that.
Shalom, shalom, Jerusalem. Peace be to you. When Messiah comes to take us home, may his praise be found in you.
In that you shared what it did not hold for you prior to being a Christian, just only a Jew, now can you relate what this all means to you, the 10th plague, the Seder meal, now that you are a Christian?
The irony, of course, when I first became a believer, I did not take communion. I didn't understand communion. Communion seemed very pagan to me, this whole thing of eating blood and of drinking blood and eating flesh. My pastor, you know, gave me books to read. He was very intellectual, as was I. And so everything was about study, 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 study. And so I studied. But what was so awkward for me is it wasn't until, I came to faith in the spring of 1991, after Passover. And it wasn't until the following Passover, when I was thinking about Passover, that I realized, wait a minute, communion is all about Passover.
Mm.
And the church never did anything to connect those two for me. And when I go and visit, and I visit a lot of churches, and I always teach about the Lord's Supper being what was happening during Passover. And here at this congregation, I always set it in the context of Passover.
Yes, and I love it.
Yeah, but I don't think we, in the church at large, we don't really make that obvious connection for people. And maybe it's appropriate because the people don't have sensitivity to Passover.
Well, make that connection for us here, if you could.
Well,
specific.
I mean, when Jesus, I mean, if in fact the Jewish people, and Jesus was a faithful Jewish person, right? Mm-hmm. So he celebrated the Passover every year. His disciples celebrated the Passover every year. The Passover is all about the coming of Messiah, the saving one, right? And we are told that at the Passover, Elijah's going to come, and he's going to announce that the Messiah is coming, and then the Messianic age will begin. And so Jesus, on the night on which he was betrayed, it was Passover, which I don't think a lot of people, for some reason, even though it's really clear in the scriptures, but in our liturgies, we don't make that connection really well. On Passover, when he's distributing the Passover bread, he breaks it and says, "This is my body." And then he gives them the wine, the Passover wine. It happened to be the cup of wine after supper, which was the third cup of wine of the Seder meal, which is the cup of redemption. He says, "This is my blood." And suddenly that connection for them was, this is the Passover lamb who is to be sacrificed for us. And his blood not only is painted on our doorposts, but on our hearts. And the angel of death certainly passes over us. And I think all, you know, if for me, all of that came into all of a sudden sort of, it was like, you know, and speaking to your audience and speaking to you, the blind man who was partially healed, right? He could see people, but they looked like trees. And Jesus said, okay, well, let's do this again. And he does it again. And he rubs it in his eyes, and suddenly everything was clear. It was like that for me with regard to the Lord's Supper.
One bread, one body.
Any other thoughts when you think of Moses giving the word to Pharaoh, saying the oldest son will die, and he walks out? Anything more you'd like to relate on this 10th plague?
Well, I the thing that always disturbs me about all the plagues, about this entire vignette, if you will, is the business of God hardening Pharaoh's heart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pharaoh seemed to want to cave to Moses' demands a few times throughout these events. And yet the scriptures say that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. And the reality is, I have really wrestled with what that means, and especially with the 10th plague, because of course that was a plague of death on the land. And it was the final linchpin that fell in the releasing of the Israelites. And yet, even then, Pharaoh's heart was hardened in this plague. And he chased after him to bring them back. And we see this, you know, at the same time for this, I mean, the culmination of this plague is at the same time this joyous event of the separation of the Red Sea and the Israelites walking across it into freedom. But when that happens, we lose the fact that so many people lost their lives as the sea crashed back down upon them. For those who cross that water without faith, they have nothing but destruction. For those who cross through the water in faith, they are saved. And of course, that's a picture of baptism as well. And when we, you know, God is not in the business of killing people. He doesn't desire to, and he doesn't harden Pharaoh's heart to make sure that people die. The reality is that when we worship ourselves, and of course Pharaoh was a god in Egypt, and Pharaoh believed in his own press, right? So, you know, his heart was hardened because he wasn't about to give up his authority. And that's what this plague is all about, really, is giving up our flesh, giving up our will, giving up our authority, and giving it over to God. And God is going to let us harden our hearts. I mean, I don't believe that God, in those words, physically hardens heart. I think what he does is he gives us over to our own natural inclinations. And if we're not willing to trust him and follow him, then our natural inclinations will lead us to nothing but destruction. And that's the nature of this 10th plague.
By the way, just for the record, I'm not Jewish, and yet I'm a member of this congregation. You don't have to be Jewish, then, to attend a Messianic Jewish congregation?
Well, I'll give you my own thoughts on that. I think you're Jewish.
Tell me why.
Well, in the book of Romans, Paul talks about the Gentiles being grafted into the tree of Israel, to the tree of root, you know, fed by the root of Abraham and all the promises of God. And he talks about those that are not faithful are cut off. I was cut off of that tree. Mm-hmm. I was laying on the ground, drying up, brittle, not prepared for nothing but the fire. And by God's grace, the great God and gardener that he is, he picked up this dead branch that was me and grafted me back into the tree and gave me life. But he's given you life as well, and you're fed from that same root. And anybody who's adopted should know that they receive all the benefits of the family that they're adopted into. And so, you know, I would argue, and I know this is fighting words for most of my Jewish friends, but anybody who comes to faith in Jesus is essentially, if you want to call it, Jewish. A believer, I'll put it in a more biblical term, you're Israel. And Israel is Israel. It's the children of God. And if we want to talk about being Jewish as only being, you know, because we were born of a Jewish mother and it doesn't have anything to do with our faith, which is the definition of being Jewish in the rabbinic system. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense when, in fact, what it means to be Jewish is to trust in God's promises, to even wrestle with God. That's what Israel means. But to wrestle with God, but to give ourselves up and receive the salvation that he has for us in Messiah Yeshua. Ideally, we would love to have not just the wild olive trees, but also the natural branches that are destined for the fire. And yet, by God's grace, he can graft them back in and they can bloom again like Aaron's staff and nourish from that root.
Amen. And of course, the roots of Christianity are in Judaism.
Christianity is a Jewish religion.
It really was great to have Pastor Kevin give his perspective, both as a Jew growing up, as well as then a Christian who was a former Jewish religion, but giving his perspective on the Passover from a Christian's point of view. It's cool. But let's go back to that night of the 10th plague and see what actually took place. We're going to start reading in Exodus chapter 12, verse 28.
The Israelites did just what the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go, worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and go. And also, bless me." The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, we will all die. The people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs, wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. The Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them, as well as large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough they had brought from Egypt, they baked cakes of unleavened bread. The dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have time to prepare food for themselves.
Well, thank you very much for taking some time to be with us and sharing both your background, your thoughts, your experiences. We sure do appreciate it.
And we won't be forgetting about the Seder either.
All right. Well, hopefully you can have a Seder next spring.
As we say, next year in Jerusalem.
Amen. Lashana Tovas.
Pastor Kevin, would you do us the honor of giving us the blessing that you give us in church every week?
Absolutely. Yivrechek Adonai v'yismarecha, Yar Adonai pravelecha v'chunecha, Yis Adonai panav alecha, v'yasem lecha shalom. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.
Amen.
Amen.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Jolly Old St. Nicholas, the Canadian Brass, One Bread, One Body, John Michael Talbot, Through Heaven's Eyes, the soundtrack from The Prince of Egypt, Shalom Jerusalem, Paul Wilbur. Interlude musicians Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn. And special thanks to Pastor Kevin Parviz of Congregation Chai V'Shalom in St. Louis, Missouri.